Hi, I'm Clemmie Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. It is a real joy to bring you this week's episode with Anna and Matt, aka Mother Pucker and Papa Pucker, who have recently published their second best-selling book, Where Is My Happy Ending?, which saw them interview a plethora of people on what it means to them to be happy. And today's chat is all about those discoveries. Now, Anna is a good friend of mine, but rarely do we manage to find the time to sit down and have a proper, deep and meaningful chat together. So this was the perfect excuse. Together with Matt, we talk about the elusive subject of happiness, from weddings to sex lives to having kids or choosing not to, juggling a career and holding on to a sense of self, all the while whilst trying to find that happily ever after with someone you love. It's no easy task, but our conversation was very heartwarming and extremely thought-provoking. I hope you enjoy it. Okay, so the name of the game of this podcast is Honesty, which I'm sure you're both pretty adept at, but we start with a quick fire round to get you in the mood.
Oh, wow.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how fun are you?
I mean, I used to be like a 10 out of 10. Now I'm around 4.5.
I think that shifts over the course of the day. So right before lunch, I'm probably a 2. During lunch, I'm an 8 or a 9, and I'm singing to myself as I'm making something to eat. And, you know, that was sort of peak and trough over the course of the day. I probably steady out at a sort of 6.8.
Yeah, I've never thought about it. I'm most fun when I'm around food too.
Yeah.
Top line. I don't understand people who don't love food.
No, just face plant that.
Yeah, I mean, that's Anna and I have bonded most over trying to nab canapes.
Like, there's been points where I just haven't spoken to you in favour of there being food. I'm like, Clemmie or food? Food.
Yeah.
Always
and
wins.
I understand that. On a scale of 1 to 10, how popular are you?
Oh, God, again, I used to be a 10 out of 10. Now I think, again, down to about a 4.5, and that's mainly my family members. That's 4 members of my family.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, are we talking popular in the global sense or just in our, you know? I mean,
the whole point is you take it as you like.
On the Bieber scale, I'm probably 0.2, but
within
my own home... I mean, again, it sort of really does shift through the course of a day. There are definitely times when I'm very, very unpopular.
By everyone.
To the extent that I feel like I might be sent off to self-isolate in the garden.
I don't think we send you off. You just self-isolate
in
the garden.
I'm a 5.
5.
On the home scale.
But is Bieber your life goals?
No, I mean, I was just trying to think of who is one of the most popular people on earth. So it could be the Beyonce scale.
Interchangeable.
It's who is the most popular human right now?
I think use the Bieber as your benchmark.
Yeah. But who is the most popular human on earth right now?
Yeah, they're probably good shouts. Even the thought of being that popular makes me anxious.
Yeah, sounds horrible.
You're the first person to scale that and I really like it.
Okay, thank you. I'm here to bring something fresh.
He is quite fun, actually. Actually.
Pretty fun.
It's not just the two of us. He's actually quite fun.
Yeah, it's funny when you look at your partner in a different context and you're like, God, yeah, he's quite fun.
Is that guy?
No. Yeah, why are you being so nice to other people?
It's because there's someone else in the room.
Because they have to be. Favourite colour?
It would be a cobalt blue.
You're quick off the mark with that.
It's quite a turn because it used to be the colour of my school uniform.
Oh, right.
So I hated it for a long time, but now I've made peace with it. And I'm not going to lie, it's good on blonde.
Yeah.
I mean, spiritually, a fire engine red or a British Racing green. In terms of wardrobe, I don't go very far from jet black, navy blue or charcoal grey.
That's solid.
Spiritually.
Well, as I said...
The colour that makes me feel the most and
it feels
happiest
like,
and what have
but
you.
But you're drawn to, you're in it, yeah.
Red and green, Christmas, basically.
Basically,
my
spirit is Christmas, but I can't display that openly.
Oh, you should try.
Clothing.
I think you could weave a bit of racing green into
it's
your day today.
It's too much. I look like a radish or something.
How would you describe your relationship with money?
Fleeting.
Fleeting.
I think we suffer from the fact that we're both terrible with money, which is like you generally need one wise head on the cash front in a relationship, and we're both absolutely awful. I just make a series of bad financial choices. And my approach has always just been to just try and earn more rather than stop spending.
Mm. But the wine choices usually come after you've had a bottle already.
Definitely. Well, yeah, so there is that. But I think sort of in younger days, I was fairly potless for a while and sort of prided myself on not spending money and being really, really frugal. And then the moment I had any kind of disposable income, I tried really hard to dispose of it very quickly on fleeting things, like not, buying nice stuff that would last, but food and drink mostly.
Is that inherently wrong? If you had the money,
well, you know,
to be enjoyed.
I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Well, I've learned something new about both of you. What star sign are you both?
Well, there's a new star sign now.
What?
Yeah, there's another star sign which has shaken the roots of everything I know.
Does it move under the auspices of the gullibility
cloister
or whatever
wrong
it is?
Crowd, I'm into it.
No. So I was a Taurus, but now I'm an Aquarius, which is really...
No, it can't shift that much.
Yeah.
Aquarius is in January.
No, it's all... Google it. Google the new star sign.
Are you telling me that the people that made it up wrong?
They made it up. Mystic Meg has sold us a lie. Taurus, stubborn like a bull and shaped like a pear.
Does your star sign really determine your body shape? Is that...
It was something Mystic Meg wrote once and it stuck with me. Stubborn as a bull, but shaped like a pear. And I was like, pretty bang on.
Can you tell me what you are?
I'm Libra.
Are you?
Balanced.
Indecisive.
Balanced. Considered. Very handsome as well. Apparently.
You've got the tendency for people to fall in love with you.
Yeah, I know. It's a curse.
But not very good at committing.
No. It's a double curse.
It's a real
conundrum. No, I didn't know any of that, but I'll take it. Yeah, thank you.
I'm just nodding sagely.
What would you like to be remembered for?
Oh, I think... Oh, that's quite a big one. Mm. I think I'd like to be remembered... for making my family feel happy. I think in those moments it's like, oh, what is the big thing that I've done?
The legacy.
And actually, the legacy. It's like all the big things I'm doing are for them, even though we're squabbling a lot and not always very happy. But I want them to remember that at the moments where we were dancing to Electric Dreams in the kitchen, slinging the kids about, with health and safety measures out the window. And I want them to remember that feeling of being lifted high. And Matt, you're in there somewhere too.
So what I'd like to be remembered for is probably scoring an extra time winner in like a World Cup final or Champions League final or something. But I understand that is now unlikely.
Oh, it's really sad when those dreams get dashed.
I've had to sort of readjust my ambition a little bit. Yeah. And I guess, there's a quote that we use in the first book, Parents in the Shit Out of Life, by the, and I'm going to sound like a real intellectual here, but I just Googled quotes and it happened to be by this guy, by the South American revolutionary Jose Marti, who said that every man wants to have a kid, plant a tree and write a book because these are things that you leave behind. And it kind of does fit a little bit with what I'd like to leave behind. I'd like to leave behind books that make people absolutely blub with tears and howl with laughter. I'd like to plant something that doesn't die within 3 months, which is my current strike rate. But also, you do, I think, and probably top of that list, want to be remembered as, someone who was... good partner and nice dad who helped create nice new people and supported and empowered the people that you're there with.
Yeah.
Lorraine Kelly said that the problem is with empowering the young women in your life is that to be independent is that then suddenly they are independent.
Yeah.
You're like, oh God, this is a tricky one to manage.
Reality.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not looking forward to that stage.
No. So be careful what you wish for, darling.
Yes, exactly. We want to raise independent and empowered young women.
Who still listen to us.
Yeah.
Put their shoes on.
Just do what they're fucking told.
Put their shoes on.
Yeah.
Oh. Do you know what I do now with our youngest, is I put her outside into the elements and make her decide what she needs.
Really?
She just won't put the things on, so I put her outside and she'd go, I need shoes. I'm like, great, yeah, go figure. I need that. Here you go. It cuts out 10 minutes of negotiation. Just put them outside and they can work it out.
Really?
Yeah. Even when it's raining, I'm like, what do you think you need now? Umbrella there? Yeah? You need some wellies?
She's got it. She's got it.
Done.
She's ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, that time you put her in the snow and just the nappy was a bit much. But
she got it. She worked it out pretty sharpish.
The neighbours were judging.
We're raising strong, independent women.
Just as a caveat, that didn't happen.
No, no one's judging you.
Yeah.
Three words your inner critic would use to describe you.
Skittish.
Oh, really?
All over the place. Overexcitable. And this is one that's quite pertinent. I don't think the word over-emotional is wrong. I think over emotion is wrong, but I've got a really high EQ that sometimes is quite damaging to our relationship is the best way to put it. I'm very emotionally intelligent and, you know, it just doesn't always sit well. It's a joy to be with.
I don't know, this is really difficult. It's like one of those interview questions. What are your greatest flaws? Well, I'm a perfectionist. Sometimes I work too hard. So I don't know what my inner critic would say. I suppose I have a tendency to start things, and then once I've got to the stage where I realise I can do that thing, then I put it down and I don't want to do it anymore. And I don't have that need to then go on and prove that to the wider world.
We so call I've that got, half a job, Bob, in
well,
our house.
No, I've got a distinct memory of, and this, this is quite a sort of a sappy analogy, but I've got a distinct memory of an egg and spoon race as a small child and being way out in front with my egg and spoon thinking, I mean, I can win this, so I don't have to. And just sort of deliberately dropping it and waiting for my friends to catch up and then sort of sauntering across in third. I thought, well, I know I can win it. Why do I have to show these people?
Anna and I cannot comprehend
no,
that.
I know.
It's weird that meanwhile, I'm like, literally, this is it. This is my moment. My problem is I'd then trip over because I was too busy self-congratulating.
Why didn't?
But I just think that in my mind, it's, well, as long as once I prove it to myself, I don't really care what
anyone else
thinks.
But you hadn't actually won. You know, anything could have happened or were you going to...
I mean, it was an egg and spoon race with on a flat surface with about three... Things meters happen. Left to go.
You're just like, I've got it. Yes. Don't need to bother anymore.
Yeah.
So the reason I actually have you here is to talk about happiness in relation to your brilliant book, best-selling book, no less.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that was exciting. It was.
Definitely exciting.
Yeah.
So first of all, how happy are you right now?
Wow. Matt uncovered a very interesting bit in the book where... You know, we're sort of chasing this happily ever after. And I think in response to that question, we've stopped chasing it. Mm. You know, we've stopped using the Bieber scale. We've accepted we're never going to be Bieber, which is probably a good thing. And I don't think I'd want that life.
No.
But I think we got to a point, and maybe Matt can qualify this better than me, because it was your bit.
So I did an interview with a guy called Alain de Botton, who is a sort of well-known philosopher and writer and has written lots of books about love and relationships and things. He wrote his first one when he was like 21 and it was a massive 2 million bestseller. And he's one of those sort of very, very clever people who can boil things down in a simple way and quite sort of intimidating to interview, actually, because you just, I imagine I was just going to say something divvy the whole way through. But his take on it was that the idea of happily ever after is a myth. And we've been sold this fairy tale over 200 years. Previously, you would marry someone because they lived on the farm next to yours or their dad had a cow and you would sort of get together and hope to stay together for long enough until the pox got you. And that was kind of it. That was your life expectancy, 35, and you were done. But for a couple of hundred years of fairy tales, we've been sold this idea that there is a happily ever after and life should be a permanent fairy tale, and anything that falls short of that is kind of viewed as shameful or that we in ourselves have failed. But that fairy tale idea doesn't really exist. And actually, just before that, there's a place called Good Enough, which is something absolutely to celebrate and be proud of, particularly given all the weird things and baggage that every single human carries along with them, and find another one that you can match up with and be okay with is a huge achievement to be celebrated.
I think that was it. What are we chasing? And I think when you ask about happiness today, we're happier. We're not happy.
Yeah, you're not like you know, 10 out of 10 happy,
it's not
dancing
like
on
bounding
the roof,
around, yeah, singing the hills are alive. I think that's the point, is acknowledging that there is beauty in unhappiness. There is beauty in that brokenness. And, you know, the questioning of why we say your wedding day is the best day of your life. It's like, well, what is it? Slow and steady descent to the end. Yeah. Coming back to, you know, taking it down from the Bieber scale and actually putting it on our scale and stop comparing our happiness to others, because you're always going to fall short. So to answer that, probably you're like 5.5 out of 10.
But don't you, I often think to myself, like, I think we got married at similar, I got married at like nearly 29, and the audacity of that move to like commit your life to someone, yeah, at the age of 29. Yeah. It's like, I didn't even begin to know myself.
I mean, I hadn't even settled on a favourite haircut.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's still an ongoing trauma deciding what it should be, let alone pick the person that you spend the rest of your life
with. Pick the person who's austerity for the next 20 years.
But I guess you have to, well, it helps to be that naive. But it's hard now when you go to weddings, not of most of my peers are kind of married, but of younger siblings. And I get emotional watching people make those vows because they have no idea. And, we, you know, I've only been married 10 years. Not only, it's an achievement, but of what is ahead of them. It's huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
I said this to Matt when we were going through the process of writing it. I was like, I've realised that I didn't marry you on our wedding day. Very clearly didn't marry you then. I married you through miscarriage, redundancy, postnatal depression, all the little sort of dark idiosyncrasies that lurk between two people, in all honesty, shoehorning their lives together. Yeah. You're literally putting two pieces of separate jigsaw puzzles. Like, let's ram those pieces together and let's go. And actually, it's the gaps in between those two pieces that actually we've looked to redefine. And I think in ourselves, we went into writing the book really cynically. I think we were just kind of like, what, you know, we are two journalists who happen to be married to each other. What can we find in terms of happiness out there? Like, it feels like it's all been written before, but actually when you pull together the hundreds of experts that we spoke to, you just suddenly find tools and you redefine in your own mind what happiness is. And it was basically, coming back to whether we're happy right now, there was a point where, you know, I would go to get a gherkin out of the fridge and Matt would just say, I'll give you a gherkin. And I was like, I don't want a sexual subtext with my Corniche on. And actually, I would sort of take that as a bit of fronting and I don't enjoy that exchange. And then there would be a point where he would say, you know, I'd be like, can I just grab the remote control? And he'd be like, I'll give you the remote control. And I was like, again, doesn't really work. I don't need the subtext there. But actually, I did need it. I do like those moments, and they are not how I pictured them. They're not how the world has said this is what love is. But you know what? I would be sad if he didn't hand me a banal object with smutty subtext. And that was actually,
I think,
it.
Can I just say, in the case of remote control, it would probably be, I'll press your buttons.
Okay.
That's, yeah, reframe that.
That's better. So,
okay. For anyone judging,
I was, you know, I was downplaying his pure talent in this world. But yes, I think that's coming back to the happiness. It is in those moments.
Yeah.
And stop trying to force that piece of the jigsaw to communicate in the way you communicate.
Yeah.
I'm so still learning that.
I'm the jigsaw.
You're just the big.
And more smutty innuendo is fine.
Yeah, you're giving him the green light now.
God.
In your many, many conversations with people, did you find that there are any like key attributes to happiness? You know, money, sex, fun, fulfillment, unconditional love?
Well, it's all of those things. Mm-hmm. I think a couple of bits that sort of stood out, I suppose. And one was sort of broadly around the idea of just sort of chilling out and being nicer to each other, which is the difficult thing. We spoke to lots of different people. We spoke to people with loads of kids, people with no kids. We spoke to shrinks and romance novelists, and we spoke to our parents. I went to stay with some monks in a monastery in Greece, and I went to stay on a free love commune in Portugal. But there was one guy there who I spoke to who was this 54-year-old American physicist, and they're kind of ecologists and environmentalists, a lot of them. And he was doing amazing things with sort of homemade solar panels and stuff. He said that one of the things that he learned is that when you're really angry, when you're hacked off with someone because they're late for something or they haven't done a thing that they promised or they've just been a bit snarky with you, don't look at what you need in that moment. Don't think, well, actually, I need you to have not done that or I need you to apologise for it or whatever. Don't focus on what you need, but stop and think, well, what does love need now? Which sounds camembert cheesy, like the kind of thing that you would see as a life philosophy on a T-shirt sort of level. But what I think it really means is you stop and pause and think, well, what does our relationship, what's the best thing for our relationship now, rather than for just me?
Yes. And you can't and say actually, it to the other person.
You can't say
what,
it for the other
person.
What
does love need now, darling?
Yeah.
But what does our relationship need? Generally, it's just not to be a dick about that thing and be a bit nicer. And you can sort of say, it was really disappointing because I had to go to this thing and you probably could have made it on time if you were just a bit...
Yeah, not jump down.
But not just be a snarky ass about it.
Yeah, which in long-term relationships and with people you feel comfortable with, you fall into that place.
Yes,
and you hear the things coming out of your mouth, you're like, wow.
Exactly. I mean, you're much ruder to your mates and your family and also your partner than you are to colleagues or people that you vaguely know and so on.
And I think one of the points that really I pulled out of writing this book was there was the UK's oldest fisherman, Derek West, and he's been married for 70 years. And I wanted to question him on like how you keep going. And he said, well, it's by not expecting my partner, June, to save me. Mm. As in you not expecting Ben to save you, me not expecting Matt to save me, and Matt not expecting me to save him. You're not my one and only. We're not going to be together forever necessarily. He said, be together today and don't take the rest for granted. And that simple shift, he said, the big thing is we've stopped looking out to our community. So we're looking down at our phones. We're insular. There's a sort of disconnect now. And he said, when I would fall overboard out in the seas, because he's a fisherman, he said it wouldn't be my wife, June, who would save me. It'd be one of the young lads who was on one of the boats nearby who would haul me back on board. He said it would be my neighbour, Norman, who would help me out if, you know, I'd lock myself out and needed to go over his fence. It would be Sue at the corner shop who, if I didn't have the right change for milk, she'd sort me out and we'd sort it out next week. And he said it's a community. It's everyone together. And that, when you stop putting all the pressure on one person to bring you everything, because that pressure will break them. And that's what we definitely did. We became very insular. I was expecting everything from Matt when actually I needed to reach out to other people and not expect him to be my one and only. That narrative isn't helpful and isn't realistic.
It's a funny thing because, you know, after childhood, you go through a period of becoming very independent, you know, as a teenager and in your 20s, and as you start to earn money for yourself for the first time, you become very self-reliant. And it's you and, you know, a few good mates, basically, are what you rely on. And then you meet someone, you get into a serious relationship, and then you kind of, you do stop a little bit and just sort of expect them to pick up the slack, whether that's financial or logistical or emotional or whatever it might be. And actually you're lumping quite a lot on another person and they're probably doing the same to you.
Yeah.
And there's a balance between being mutually supportive and just foisting all the stuff you don't want to do onto someone else.
And also parenting like ramps that, doesn't it? You know, you're suddenly your ability to go and socialise with other people and spread everything that's going on in your mind to other people. You're suddenly in a house together.
Yes.
Contained. With all the needs of others.
Yeah, you know, and Ben has to sit through every single bit of the inner workings of my mind, whereas once upon a time when I was living with my girlfriends or I was going to an office or I was closer to my family, I'd be offloading some of that on them. And there's no way he can be the sounding board for all of it because... Yeah.
It's too much to put on one person.
Yeah.
Children are terrible for relationships, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
That was, I mean, that's the one thing
that was one
reassuring.
Of the main findings was that, so basically in every chapter, we took a different subject. So there's one on porn, there's one on sex, there's one on social media, there's one on your own family upbringing and the impact that that has on relationships. And we had one that looked at kids. And in all of the other chapters, there was a little bit of grey about the conclusions. There was a little bit of grey on the impact that porn has on relationships. There were sort of divergent opinions on the impact that sex has on relationships. The one area where it was 100% black and white was the fact that kids are terrible for relationships. This was found in research in Asia, in Europe, in the Americas, among different ethnic groups, among gay couples and straight couples. having kids is terrible. There was some researchers in the States that pulled together all of these bits of research from across the world, and they said that some significant form of relationship deterioration when children arrive is universal. And that's oddly, on one level it's quite depressing, but
really
oddly reassuring that actually...
It's not us, it's them.
And also that you've got to get through it, haven't you?
Yeah.
I think it's knowing that. And I interviewed Joyce Williams, this octogenarian sex blogger. And she, you know, other than suggesting the various IKEA accoutrements that you might need to have sex at a later stage, the IKEA sheepskin rug, she said, good for the knees. And, you know, the kitchen step, she said, good for the back if you're doing it from behind. She had many tips, but the one that really hit home, links to what Matt said, was she looked at me as I was asking all these questions about doing it when you're older, what it looks like, what love looks like, you know, beyond childcare. And she just looked me in the eye and she said, look, you are in the most difficult stage right now. And she said, cling on, my lovelies, because it really is beautiful on the other side. And I think it was seeing that sense of sort of hope in what can be quite an administrative quagmire at times that you feel you're failing at a lot together, separately. You know, I think there'll always be, it's like a dam where you've not got enough hands, and to know that you can get through it and actually want to get through it together, but acknowledging that it is hard and it's not just you, it is them.
So I always do a bit where I ask the good people of Instagram about any given subject, and I ask them about happiness. I ask them if they were happy, and 80% were.
That's a good innings.
I don't know what day of the week and at what time that was, but that's good. I asked them what would make them happier. Sleep, I'm with you there. Less rushing, more support, better mental health, financial stability, living by the sea, being able to get pregnant, a personal chef. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Aim high.
You want financial stability, but be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
I think that's, I've seen a lot of people, I mean, I'm not talking on behalf of Justin Bieber, but are you really happy?
Yeah, but that's beyond financial stability. That's excessive wealth. I mean,
yeah,
there's a line, isn't there? But Alex Holder, who wrote the book Open Up About Money, found that there was a point at actually like 60K, and then after that people didn't get progressively happier with more money.
No, it's just more to worry about.
Yeah,
and more to worry about losing and stuff.
And you just scale it.
Yeah. It's like good enough.
Yeah.
And actually making, because I think we've got to a point where like the girls are sharing a room, which is great. They get on, I mean, it's nightmare at bedtime. But we got into our heads, you know, because there's this sense of, oh no, we would like them to have separate rooms, but actually we're creating that for ourselves. They're fine. And so what are we chasing?
Yeah, there's always something.
What happiness are we chasing when actually we've got the components in this house that is great?
Yeah. And it's not going to unlock this next level of happiness.
No, it's not like a Tetris game where, you know, you keep going and keep going. It's like actually coming back to what we said earlier is, you know, good enough.
Yeah, it's interesting because on another episode I did about sex, I was speaking to a couple of sex experts, and as someone who's in a long-term relationship particularly, imagining that all these single folk are having wild sex, and they reminded me that you've got to remember that intimacy is on a scale, and although they might be having hotter sex, they're not sitting with someone on a sofa holding hands.
Yes.
And that's valuable too.
Also, one of the things that came out in the sex chapter of Where's My Happy Ending is that the sort of under 30s and under 25s now are having much less sex than they were half a generation ago.
Why?
Because people are coming together less. Even with the advent of Tinder and so on, people are actually getting together less frequently. And
one of the
surprising things on Tinder and similar apps was that something like 30% of people who have arranged to meet up with someone have never actually physically gone on a date, and people tend to play it as a sort of self-affirmation game, and they get the swipe and they arrange the date and then they just don't go and so or they cancel it at the last minute or what have you. And so people are 25 year olds now having much less sex than 25 year olds 10 15 20 Enough. Years ago, because of all of these reasons and these slight weird disconnects. And it seems, yes, it's a terrible waste of firm young flesh, I think.
Oh yeah, guys, my big advice to young people is have all the sex.
Yes, so
that is quite a newsflash for me.
Well, I went on a hand job workshop in Amsterdam, and that was brilliant because I expected it to have kind of undertones of kind of a hen do to it. And I went in a kind of like quite cynical, yeah, like, what is this going to be? But there were a group of 20 women who really wanted to become good at the hand job. And it was very equal. There was also a vaginal massage course. Mm. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't sort of discriminating against anyone. And these women sort of turned up. They were bankers, they were lawyers, and they just wanted to be really good at giving a hand job. And the sex worker and her gigolo husband, Cora Emmons, she opened up with this one sentence and just said, "The hand job is the lost art of the sexual world. We all go direct to oral, but we should not bypass the digits." And you're like, and I mean, you know, it was, what was interesting for me was I stayed in touch with Mary Aline, who was a banker who went on the course. Mm-hmm. We were both taking notes. And nothing prepares you for getting your notepad out with a massive dildo in front of you and lube with somebody at the front going, "The hand job is the lost art of the sexual world."
Note that down.
And she said she tried to do, there was one move that looked like a squid that you do, like you come down on the shaft with your hands like a squid. And she said, we were emailing after, she said, I tried it on my husband, but seriously, it was not working. And we just started laughing, like could not stop laughing. And she said, what I realised was we just needed to laugh.
Yeah.
And actually, you can go on these crazy routes to find happiness, but actually sometimes find it in unusual places. And she said, I'd invested in the course.
Yeah.
I could do the squid hand job move, but actually all probably we needed to do was roll around laughing at my bad attempts to wank him off.
Yeah.
And she said, I sent him on the vaginal massage course. We're waiting to hear from
it's
that.
It's so true, isn't it? Yeah. I asked the people of Instagram what the key to making a long-term relationship work was. And they said patience, love and laughter, being realistic, choosing to see the best in your partner, which is something that you, again, particularly in during the sleep-deprived years, is really hard to remember, isn't it? That the very things that you probably found attractive about them are the bits that end up really grating you. Mm. And that's quite an unfair shift, isn't it?
Yeah.
Does that happen for men, or is it just women who feel that way?
Well, there's a slightly, again, slightly cheesy phrase that was quoted to me by a few older people leading up to our wedding, which is that men get married hoping their partner will never change. Women get married hoping that their partner will change, and both parties end up disappointed.
Yes, so true.
And I think there is really a little bit of truth in that. I mean, it probably sounds like I'm a bit developmentally stunted, but I don't feel like I have changed that much. But I suspect that some of the things that I'm still doing 10 years on have become a bit more irritating.
Yeah. I'm no longer the bouncy, fun 24-year-old you signed up to.
Yeah.
I'm just a
friend of ours gave a great example the other day. She's been with her partner for 8-10 years or something, and she was saying, when they first started going out, she'd come home and find out that he'd made a ridiculous pillow fort in their living room and was just sort of sitting there watching TV. And she'd go, "Oh my God, this is so much fun. Why don't I dive in there with you?" And like, he still does that, even though he's in his 30s. And she comes back and she's like, "For God's sake, why are these all over the place? I just want to sit on the sofa."
Yeah, that's it.
And there's a sort of shift, and it works both ways.
Yeah, but it's really hard to comprehend that as a That's
the pillow fort theory. Oh,
yeah, I'm gonna hold on to that. It's so true, isn't it? People said try not to change the other person, and most importantly, growing together without losing yourself. And that is again what we've kind of touched on. But you can kind of merge, and then that becomes, that's when you lose sense of yourself. And if you're not truly happy in yourself, I don't think you can be happy in a relationship.
Like, I think when I interviewed my parents, I was interviewing my dad about like their happiness and how they find happiness. And it was very much that, having separate things that they do, but also understanding what each other loves and nurturing that. Mm-hmm. And for my dad, he loves chili gherkins. There's a real gherkin theme.
Yeah, there really is.
He loves the chili gherkin. And my mum sort of stockpiled 20 jars of chili gherkins for him. And that was like
this
her love letter.
Pre-coronavirus.
Just because.
Yeah. No, this was her love letter.
Yeah.
And my dad was telling me about how they had to learn to break together. That was where they said, you've got to be separate, but you have to learn to break together. Mm. And he was telling me all this in his favourite fleece that he got for like $14.99 from Sports Direct, and my mum had tried to sell many times in the local charity shop, and he had a massive mug that just said "Shoeaholic" on it. It's like,
this is it.
You're the fashion one, Dad. Yeah. You're the style muse in the relationship.
But that is goals, isn't it? That is relationship goals.
That's it, actually. Yeah. The optics on it were just stockpile some chili gherkins and my dad sipping a Shoeaholic cup of tea.
I think in a nice way to kind of round up, fast forward however many years, 30 years, what does happiness look like for you two?
Well, there was one quite sweet piece of research from Stony Brook University in New York. And there's a bit in the book where we look at the chemical reactions that happen when you fall in love with someone, that first phase of love, when the oxytocin's running high and there are various other things that happen and that explain why we feel how we do in that first period. And then those chemicals and hormones sort of edge away. And hopefully you're left with enough to sort of see through. But there was one very sweet piece of research which took lots of older couples who'd been together for sort of 20, 30 years and put them through MRIs and showed them pictures of a stranger, someone who was famous off the telly, a friend that they vaguely knew, and their partner and various other people. And what they found was that when people saw the picture of their partner, the same pleasure zones in the brain lit up that light up when you're in that first flush and the cortisol's pumping and you've got oxytocin running through your veins. And I guess happiness with another person, for me, would be that you're still lighting up those parts of the other one's brain 30 years on.
What a weirdly romantic thing to say.
And I think my vision of our future together, and I said this in the book and I'd never said it to Matt, was that wherever it was we live, it's near, really close to a delicatessen that has really good cheese, so that when your knees have gone and I'm just wheeling you about the place, or you're wheeling me about the place.
I think we know which way around it's not.
that we cheese.
Can access cheese really easily and sit and eat cheese.
So to kind of like conclude things, first of all, I want to ask you to, if you've got anything you want to shout about, and where can people find you?
Yes, well,
this is the bit.
Just before we go, if we could just quickly dedicate this book and podcast to Rachel Clements, who we interviewed in the book. Rachel got in touch with us as we were writing this book, saying, I want to tell our real love story. And what came out of it was that she had pulmonary fibrosis, 24% use of her lungs. And she sadly didn't make it to publication date, but she wanted any podcast we did and any books that we put out there to say that love is the idiosyncrasies of your relationship. She said love is when you ask him or her to go and get those things from the Tesco Metro and they don't pick them up, so you remove the kiss from a text message. And so you can find the book that is dedicated to Rachel and Amazon, Waterstones, WH Smith, and all information about us is at mother_pucker. And I always do this, www.motherpucker.co.uk. You don't need the www.
Yeah, I think you just put motherpucker into Google. Put it into Google.
Got it.
And the book is called
Where's My Happy Ending? Yeah.
It's really, really good. I highly recommend it.
Not Bieber good, but...
No, but aspiring that
aspiring
way.
Aspiring Bieber.
I always ask my audience to complete the sentence, I'll be honest, I. And I'm going to read out their answers and then I'm going to ask you to give me one, I'll be honest, I. I'll be honest, I wish I hadn't left my husband 10 years ago. I'm such a moaner, I annoy myself. Ate crisps for breakfast. My kind of person. Don't want any more children. One is enough for me, but I feel under pressure to have more. Wish I wasn't fat. Masturbate when I work from home. And me, my one is, I'll be honest, I am happily married, but I'm increasingly aware of how tough the idea of staying together forever is and that it involves a lot of work.
I'll be honest, despite writing a book about finding happiness, still do think the worst, overthinking the best of Matt, and I need to switch that.
I'll be honest, I embezzled some money from an orphanage in I'll be honest, I don't really know how to answer this question.
Go for something more lighthearted.
I mean, I'll be honest, I eat avocado more frequently than my taste for it would direct me to, because of its ubiquity, and I feel like I should like it more.
So in conclusion, I've been Clemmy Telford and this wonderful pair have been Anna and Matt, a.k.a. Mother Pucker and Papa Pucker. And this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe and tell your mates all about it. Thank you very much. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Honestly. If you found this week's episode interesting, which I hope you did, I'd love to know your thoughts. So please do give me a rating or review, and even better, hit the subscribe button. That way you'll get each week's episode delivered straight to you.